It's the Hoffman Show. We're on the Team 980. We're always live as well on the free Odyssey app. And I'm excited to talk about this story. We probably could do 3 hours on this story, but we're going to have David Ubbin from The Athletic join us here and talk about this UNLV story that you've probably gotten like 17, I was going to say ESPN alerts, but The Athletic alerts on your phone. Yes, clearly, David. That's where everyone's getting their news from, as they should. And you and your colleagues have written quite a bit about this. I'm going to try to summarize quickly for the audience that hasn't maybe clicked on any of those yet. So their quarterback says he was promised a bunch of NIL money, hasn't gotten it. His dad is saying, you know, one thing, and the school is saying one thing. Their NIL collective has chimed in. There's a disagreement over NIL money. And now that we are in this redshirt deadline period, where if you play 4+ games, the season counts towards your eligibility. Players, and he is the highest profile one to do this, are saying, like, if we don't get the money that we were promised, or if we don't like the way things are going, I'm going to redshirt myself, as opposed to the traditional redshirt, which has been imposed on them by coaches. That is the quickest summary I can give. In terms of this specific story, like, as you hear all the different participants chime in, what do we feel like we know? And then what is disputed here that's kind of at the center of this specific version of events?
Well, I think, you know, if you look at the statements from the UNLV side of things, there seemed to be a lot of dispute over whether the offer verbally was enforceable. Nobody seemed to disagree that there was a verbal offer. What does that mean? Can that be enforced? I think it's sort of up for debate. And, you know, in terms of where do we go from here now, I think seems to sort of be up for debate as well. You know, Matthew Sluka seemed like they've been, in his representation, seemed like they've been pushing on UNLV since this deal came in February. I mean, he didn't come to campus until the summer. And then there was another conversation in camp. And then they've played a couple games. And after one of the last games, there was another conversation. They couldn't really not only get paid, but get a written contract that's enforceable. And it seems now that the real reason why, which the family wasn't being told, is that they didn't have the money to pay it.
So there was no written contract when this, initial thing was made. That's not up for dispute. There's no, the family's not being like, oh no, we have this writing. No. So what does that say? I guess that leads to kind of immediately to the larger conversation and some of the things that I was seeing on Twitter. I'm sure conversations you're having as someone who covers college football, like, what is the current state of the agent game? Because this deal was theoretically negotiated by NIL agents, but I'm assuming the quality of said agents is extraordinarily vast. Is that at the crux of one of the issues? Obviously, we can talk in a second, and I do want to, about like the NCAA's lack of rules and regulations, but the actual agents who are negotiating these deals, is that at the crux of a lot of problems, the fact that there aren't standards and quality for the people doing the negotiating?
It varies pretty widely. You know, the Jaden Rashada deal got a lot of attention. He did have a written contract for $13 million with Florida's collective. That deal was negotiated by a 20-year-old SMU student. Wow. But in this case, you know, it's Antonio Cromartie's cousin. Marcus Cromartie was the agent in question here, and he does work with NFL clients. He does work in the NIL space. But it seems that UNLV at some point during all this discovered that he was not licensed to work in Nevada, which seems like a problem because there's an NFL team in Nevada and there are two FBS teams in Nevada. Seems like an issue. But ultimately, you know, I haven't heard a lot. He works for Equity Sports. It's a very large firm. So I don't think it's necessarily like just some guy running around, you know, having deals. He is seemingly certified by the NFLPA. A lot of those guys double dip and do some NIL work. So the quality can vary widely. So outside of the licensing issue in Nevada, and honestly, I don't know a lot about being licensed to be an agent in certain states. I don't know a lot about the logistics of that. Again, agencies and all that stuff is very new to college football. But ultimately, I don't think that this is a situation of an agent gone wild. And it seems like, you know, there's a lot of deals that are agreed to verbally, and then the contract comes later. And sometimes it does take a little while. Not to this degree, and you could call into question, like, should you move from Massachusetts to Las Vegas without a written contract? Yeah, that seems to be some that's a fair question there. But ultimately, you know, he had trust in the coaching staff. He was given $3,000 for moving expenses, so that's something. But I think you just don't really consider that they're just not going to pay you or not going to have a written contract. You keep, and especially when they're not saying we're not going to do it, or they're, you know, it's just a delay and a delay. It's like, well, we'll get to it this time. We'll get to it this time. You want to have faith in them until at some point, you know, you get to a point where your red shirt's coming up and you got to decide, well, I can't do this anymore.
David Ubbin of The Athletic, one of their national senior college football writers, with us here on The Hoffman Show. So I feel like so much of the stuff around NIL for years, even going back to before the rule change, just came from, for lack of a better word, David, laziness on the NCAA's part. They don't want to regulate this stuff. They don't want to deal with the headache. They're just like, yeah, sure, maybe you could do this, but like, it sounds complicated. And so when the Supreme Court was like, you have to let athletes, like amateurism, no more. You have to let them profit off their name, image, and likeness. The NCAA was like, fine, go ahead. And that was kind of it. Mm-hmm. How much of the problems that we're having with NIL could realistically be fixed if the NCAA acted as a governing body as opposed to a collection agency from the ESPN rights deals that they make billions of dollars off of?
Yeah, I mean, I think ultimately you look at there was a time to have a common sense approach to this, and you could have more clear rules, have a lot of debate over those rules, and get to a system that everybody kind of agrees on. Instead, you get dragged out of the Stone Ages by the courts, and then you don't really have any rules. You don't have any enforcement arm to enforce those rules when you talk about like tampering or contracts or things to protect kids. And if you try to put the oft mentioned, you know, guardrails, which I disagree with in general, but if you try to put guardrails on it, you're going to get challenged in court. You're going to lose. The NCAA has been beaten over and over and over in courts, and you're not going to be able to uphold any of these rules because they are anti-capitalist. And it's just not going to happen. Every time the NCAA tries to explain their business model to a court, the judge or the court kind of looks at them and it's like, you do what? It doesn't go well for them. It never does. Right. And so when you when these things are happening involuntarily, then you have a lot less control over what the terms of engagement are. And at this point, it is kind of a free-for-all. And until you have something resembling employment, resembling contracts, resembling collective bargaining, resembling a players association, which the college sports has none of that right now. And it's kind of working towards some of those things on top of revenue sharing as well from those TV deals. You're going to be stuck in this weird limbo where the sport is evolving, and that's where we're at right now.
Which of those things are getting worked on? Like, what is the hope that it becomes more organized in what area soonest?
Well, the House settlement, you know, is coming, and that seems to definitely be a something where revenue sharing is going to be coming very, very soon, just because all that money, the schools are not going to be able to keep that for that much longer. You know, these are literally billion-dollar deals. The conferences are negotiating and divvying out to schools. And so that's where the real money is. You know, people talk about NIL, but the real money is in these TV deals, and that's the money they've been trying to protect. So that's probably the closest thing. But again, if you get something – I think everybody agrees, players – coaches, administrators, the perpetual free agency is not good for the sport. But the only way you can change that is have something resembling player contracts. Maybe that's year to year. Maybe that's 2 years, 3 years, 4 years. You could probably, depending on who you are, negotiate some of those terms. But there are no norms there, and there's no ability to do that. And there's no players association to do that. There's a lot of people jockeying to kind of be that players association. So for right now, I think we get eventually towards something resembling all those things, but the revenue sharing is the only thing that really is more of a sure thing than anything else.
Do you think that football will wind up becoming its own entity in this? Because NIL is not something that is unique to football. Mm-hmm. As we, you know, if people watch, say, the Money Game, which featured, of course, Commanders quarterback Jaden Daniels, then LSU quarterback Jaden Daniels on Amazon Prime, and it highlights all the different NIL deals that all the different athletes across all of their sports are making. But mm-hmm. the revenue model in football is totally different. The amount of money that comes in via football is enormous. So, and also you have the travel logistics and all these other things that have popped up. Do you think as this regulation and the revenue sharing and all these things come in, that football winds up splitting off into its own entity?
Probably. I mean, I think for conference perspectives, I think we're definitely going to get to something close to that. You know, in the next 25 years, it doesn't make sense that Cal, you know, soccer needs to go play in the ACC or, you know,
I was a Syracuse alum, but I'm not really psyched about Stanford football last week either, but that's our problem.
Like, you know, why does, you know, Rutgers, you know, lacrosse or whatever, need to go play in the Big Ten against USC. It doesn't make sense. So I think if football breaks off, the conferences can find something that makes a little bit more sense. And then for Title IX stuff, you know, football players become just like a license. I think people don't really want them to be just become the licensed marketing arm of the university, but that simplifies a lot of things. You know, that produces a lot of eligibility questions and some logistics there. But for campus dynamics and campus economics and being compliant with Title IX, if you make them sort of just a franchise that licenses the names and trademarks and stadiums and facilities, I think a lot of people don't like that because they like to buy into the sort of, you know, these kids are just going to campus like everybody else, but they haven't been for a long time. And all of the things that we've talked about, from NIL to conference realignment and all that stuff, football is driving it and it is breaking college sports. And I think you have a chance to salvage kind of what's left if you break off football. But that, I mean, just thinking about the logistics of that is giving me a headache right now. So it's a long way before we get close to that. And I think there's a lot of people in college sports that don't want that. So I don't know that we'll ever get to something quite like what I described, but something where football is a standalone in some way feels inevitable at this point.
Yeah. I mean, these are also literally institutions, and changing institutions is hard. And yes, a lot of the people in college sports are institutionalists. So it is going to be an uphill battle for sure, but probably one that either they will get ahead of for once in their lives, or they will be dragged by either the Supreme Court and or Congress to do so. We'll see which choice they take. David Ubbin writing about all of it and the actual games, which is nice, at The Athletic. You could read his work there and click on those alerts when they come to your phone. They have good information. David, appreciate it. Thank you, sir.
Thank you. Appreciate it.